on just a second. Well, I lose that. Okay, we are recording.
Hello, and welcome to the world's most shocking sports training seminar with Jay Schroeder. I'm your host, Chris Scarborough. I'm a strength and speed specialist in the Birmingham, Alabama area. Alongside me is my co-host, Aaron Crocker, 2003 Personal Trainer of the Year, according to Personal Fitness Professional Magazine. Aaron, welcome. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And we have a panel who's going to be shooting questions at Jay's way regarding speed and strength development of athletes. And as you'll hear, we represent quite a variety of different sports. Both genders are represented here, and we certainly hope that we can answer a lot of questions. And also at the end, stay tuned because we have a lot of information regarding a bigger seminar that we'll do live coming up in the next couple of months as well. First, we have Aaron Crocker, as I've already introduced. Next, we have David Sherem. David's a sixth-degree black belt in Taekwondo. Beanie Ketchum, she is the head softball coach for women's softball at Samford University. We have Travis Self, who is a Birmingham area triathlete, an active participant, and after talking with Travis, he helps a lot of other newcomers out quite a bit. So this is beneficial to him as well from not only a training standpoint but also a coaching standpoint. And then also Eddie Crocker, who is the head wrestling coach and the assistant football coach at Homewood High School here in Birmingham, Alabama. And again, I want to welcome everyone on the panel, and I will hand it over to Aaron to introduce our special guest.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're introducing to you today Jay Schroeder, Director of Athletic Mastery, founder of UltraFit. Known to many as Coach Schroeder, Jay has a degree in physical education and has worked with athletes from all sports for more than 20 years. Jay traveled the Eastern Bloc countries to study their athletic training methodologies and philosophies, and after years of research and development, created the UltraFit program, which is a unique blend of methodologies and programs for optimizing speed and strength, as well as innovative restoration techniques. Jay combines the ARPS trainer with advanced vibration and supplementation techniques in conjunction with other sophisticated conditioning methodics. Jay has consistently produced extraordinary results for athletes of all ages at all levels of competitive sports. In the last few years, Coach Schroeder has been instrumental in preparing a long list of NFL players for their illustrious careers. He has also helped many college athletes increase their power and speed in preparation for successful careers in the professional ranks. In 2001 alone, six UltraFit-trained athletes were drafted in the NFL, and remarkably, two of them were drafted in the first round and two in the second round. To date, many athletes routinely train at the UltraFit facilities in Arizona for the NFL Combine and pro camp testing. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Jay Schroeder.
Jay, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it.
I enjoy being here.
And I'll start off the questions here. And the first thing is shock training. And that is, as strength and conditioning coaches, we're familiar with the term. Some other coaches of other sports may not be familiar with the term. So first of all, what is shock training? What exactly are you referring to when you use that term?
I think the most simple explanation would be something that physiology, the person's emotion, intellect, psychology, and spirit have not been exposed to. Most people today use only physiology when they train. Very rarely do you see them participating intellectually and or emotionally as they do when it's time to participate in sport. So my definition of shock training is utilizing all of these components that comprise a human and separate us from the rest of the animals.
Well, you know, and this is probably the most surprising answer I think I've ever heard anyone say. And if we go back to a conversation you and I had probably a week or so ago, you were telling me about going to some of the Eastern Bloc and the way that they used to prepare their athletes for various competitions. And you were telling us that there was a big misunderstanding among coaches like us in the West of how these athletes would prepare. I mean, they'd see that these athletes would have easy days and they would have harder days, and as a result of that type of training, we sort of developed a periodization where we'd have easier workouts followed by harder workouts, and you said that that's sort of misunderstood. So kind of clarify that as far as, first of all, what these athletes did, and then secondly, what we need to do in order to correct our way of training athletes.
Okay, well, first let me highlight what I saw. And what I saw was a complete lack of periodization, as we term it and have created here with micro, macro, mesocycles. That didn't exist in anything that I saw. There obviously were yearly plans, four-year plans, six-year plans, and I even saw some eight-year plans. But mainly what I saw were people who trained, and then their coach or their manager or the team manager agent would say, Chris, you have a competition on the 9th of January. Your stipend for the first quarter depends on how well you do in this competition. Well, obviously, they're going to switch what they're doing to eliminate the possibilities of failure so that they can get a large stipend. That's the main thing that I think a lot of people brought back from the Eastern Bloc and said, well, they do this for this amount of time, and they do this for this amount of time, and they do this for this amount of time, and here's the order they do it in. And I didn't evidence any such thing. Now, I'll just clarify what I did. I went over there to compete as a powerlifter, and I was an assistant coach for the women's powerlifting team. And I didn't do all these scheduled activities with the team and coaches. I went off on my own, and, in the Soviet Union at that time, you could spend a dollar and go anywhere you wanted. As long as you had more dollars, they'd come back and take you wherever you wanted to go. And I happened to meet some coaches and strength people that were interested in me, and I was interested in them, and I stayed at their home and really got to see what training was, what they did, how they did it, much different than what we read about in books or what people brought back. Again, I think we have to understand this is America, and the whole idea is marketing. And if it's one thing, anybody who knows me or has ever been associated with me, I'm not about the marketing end. I'm all about creating humans into machines for athletic performance, so that I can get my money's worth when I go watch a competition of whatever sort. I'm tired of mediocre performance. And what I did is I saw this and put it into my arsenal of my system. It isn't anything that's directly related to Soviets, Bulgaria, Egyptian, Roman, Greeks. It kind of comprises the commonality of all of them. And the commonality was they all strive for high speed, high volume, high load training. That's also where everybody failed and where everybody had the unnatural repercussions of overtraining symptoms and those things. But what I saw over there was people who trained hard, maximally, every day, multiple times per day. As we regard supplements and nutrition, it existed minimally there. It was hard work. And I already had the belief that we didn't really need supplementation. If we stimulated ourselves correctly, then we could eat minimal amounts of food without it being any specifically grown or nurtured type things or specially raised beef or anything. But if we trained and stimulated ourselves properly as humans, we were capable of deriving anything we needed from that. And that's really the origin of my system.
Well, and the funny thing is, you've probably just said some things, you know, that is, even with the coaches on the line right now, have probably are it's completely foreign to what they've heard in the past. It's probably completely foreign to some things that they've been brought up to believe or things that they've read to believe. And, you know, in particular, you know, there's always going to be a question of, you know, the nutrition, as you brought up just a minute ago. But Benny, in particular, I wanted to get you to ask regarding the females, because, you know, as far as, before we get into the nutrition end, what in particular questions do you have regarding the females and how they would be impacted by the training?
Well,
Benny, still on the line with us? Okay.
Yeah, I'm here. Well, I think for us, you know, I'm not, you know, trained in the exercise physiology and strength part of it. You know, I'm just trying to learn as I go here and trying to maximize, you know, the output of our athletes in terms of speed and power, which is really what we're talking about in softball. And so we've gone to completely, almost completely anaerobic training. And so, but I think for us, one of the hardest things is there's so much research done for the guys and not as much for the girls. And so we're always, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's best for the female athlete. Their bodies are different, and we don't at our school, we don't necessarily have the elite athletes. So we're trying to take kids and not only train them in the skills, but also increase their speed, increase their power, you know, and take an average athlete and make them great by training. And so, I mean, I probably don't know enough to ask really good questions other than I think for us, well, for me, one of the big things is how do you know when you're overtraining? I mean, I know you can get injuries and things like that, but, you know, it's just difficult for me to know, you know, how much is too much during certain times of the season. And so that, I guess that would probably be one of my primary concerns or the things that I'm most willing, you know, really want to learn about. So.
Okay. Coach Schroeder, that's a good question. Let me just start off by saying I don't train women any different than I train men. The only thing that's different in women, well, first of all, it's a good thing, is they tend to train harder because they don't believe they know everything. They don't believe they have the answer to everything. And they're not this freaking testosterone-driven person.
Yeah.
They understand that there's more to life other than getting in there and slamming weights around.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I do take into consideration are, first of all, obviously, menstrual cycle, hormone levels, whether they're on any type of birth control, whether they've been pregnant before.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that,
How does that play into their training schedule? Or I mean, I'm sure even we've never taken that into consideration.
Yeah, you,
of course,
you don't. 15
kids. They're all
again?
On different cycles, so.
Yeah, absolutely, but you can easily manipulate the training if you know when they're coming upon this. Usually with my girls, they'll let me know 6 or 7 days before, or I'll have a calendar that says, well, it's menstrual cycle should be beginning here. And when it does, then they go into just a different methodic schedule. And they're all pre-planned. We know what we want to do when it occurs. And so it's very simple. You don't have to change anything. If you were to walk into my gym, you'd see men, women, old, young, elite, poor athletes, or non-athletic at all training together, doing the exact same training.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just go back here. The thing that would be the most basic would be position. If you can learn position and you can learn anything and you can become strong and you can become fast, will you become Carl Lewis or Ben Johnson or whoever it is, who knows? That's something no one knows until you push yourself far. But as far as getting results with men and women, it's all about being in position and training hard enough. All of these other things are ancillary and so far down the road, but they're the easy things for people to worry about. It's the baloney stuff. It's minutia. It's not worth worrying about until you get down the road, until someone is fit enough, strong enough, can hold position long enough to have these things either interfere or create more elite performance. So I think in America, people get caught up in all this minutia because it's easy. And you don't have to think, you know, much deeper than the surface. And I wouldn't even worry about it. I've had from 4-year-old girls to 84-year-old women. I've had, well, I started off my career with grossly obese women. You had to be 365 pounds plus to enter the program. And when I trained them exactly the same way as my system exists today. And within 6.5 to 9.5 months, these were 160-pound women. No special diet, obviously eating well, whatever well means to people. To me, it means eating a little bit of everything with enough time in between and training hard enough to stimulate your physiology to use it. So I think worrying about menstrual cycles, worrying about, well, women's hips are wider and then there's this and there's that, and, you know, I think that's so far down the road that you don't even need to consider it. Most of the people that are in college today are not very good athletes. They're just people who played sports. And what they need to do is develop their physiology so that they can improve the level of their sport. And I'm sure as a coach, and I don't know how long you've been coaching, you sound pretty young, but you've seen girls that come in that were just amazing in high school, and they never really get any better as they go through their college career and or go into their professional career. They just maintain. That's all because they didn't prepare themselves to become better. So a real short answer to your question is do the basics to prepare. Don't worry about any of the minutia. It's just junk that people like to spend time on, like reading Super Training. What a joke. These guys spend hours and weeks and months on subjects that have no bearing on the basic preparation of athletes. But it's easy to talk about because it doesn't affect anything they're doing. They don't have to produce anything when they talk about that. And it gives them ideas and rationalizations. So if they fail with someone, it wasn't their fault. Well, you know, this is why, because this is what goes on. And it's just minutia. Just worry about the basics. Prepare to be good. And if you do that, it doesn't matter, male, female, young, old. The results will be there.
Jay, hey, this is Aaron calling, asking a question. Could you go back just a moment and talk about what it means to be in position and training your physiology?
Yeah, I think basically being in position, I have a saying in my gym that's this: if you're not at a right angle, it's wrong. Humans like to be at right angles. And any of you who coach, if you think about whatever aspect it is of the sport you coach, and you look back, you're going to see that in wrestling, if you attack at a 90-degree angle, you're going to be more powerful. You're going to have a greater chance of getting to the target. In softball, you know, if your upper body's twisted and your lower arm is at 75 degrees and your upper arm's at 110 degrees, you're probably not going to throw the ball where you want it to. So simply being in position is being at right angles and allowing the muscles to do the job that God intended them to do, not softball-specific or wrestling-specific or triathlete-specific or football-specific or weightlifting-specific, but human-specific. A bicep on every human in this world and anyone who ever comes into existence in this world will do the exact same job as anyone else's bicep. What they've learned after they were very young, well, it takes on a whole new meaning because they watch their fathers, their mothers, sisters, brothers, family, friends. They get into school and they do something because it becomes more comfortable to do it this way, and they no longer move like they're supposed to. As an example, if anyone has any very young children, just watch them jump off of a swing. They never land with their knees forward. They never land bent forward. They land with their upper torso erect, lower legs perpendicular to the ground, on the balls of their feet. See, because that's the natural way we do it. But as we get older and we go through life, we try and become economical and stay comfortable because we don't want to put into an area where we feel challenged or a debt is created that we're not willing to pay emotionally, intellectually, physiologically, whatever it is. We always want to feel comfortable. Unfortunately, you must be uncomfortable. And then, is it Beanie? Is that what they were saying, Coach?
Yeah.
Is that your name? Okay, I'm sorry. I wrote it down as that, and I just wanted to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about overtraining.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to improve, you better overtrain. Because if you never push yourself farther than you've been, how are you going to improve? So overtraining is, I mean, you can't eliminate it from the training aspect. Everyone must overtrain. My system controls the level of overtraining. We maintain that level for as long a period as we need, depending upon the super compensatory result that we're going to look for at whatever time down the road.
So, but isn't there a point where you overtrain to where you don't get the kind of output that you should be getting, though?
Oh, yeah, there's that point, but, Coach, very few people will ever push themselves that far. Coach, I have an 81-year-old gentleman who weighs 172 pounds. He'll walk in, no warm-up, nothing, deadlift 660, 675, no problems. He works out 3 days a week. He owns 17 companies. He takes an active role in all of them. Now, people will say, especially on a deadlift or things like cleans maybe, that you can only do them heavy every 3 to 10 days, depending on what part of the country you're in. Well, let me tell you, he'll deadlift 15 to 20 maximal reps each of these 3 days during the week. If he happens to come in on a fourth day because he didn't have to go out of town for business, he'll do exactly the same thing. There are no easy days. There are no light days. There are no medium days. It's always maximal effort. And it's easy then to control what happens in overtraining by eating, by sleeping, or more appropriately, by dreaming when you go to bed, not just going there and closing your eyes and imagining that you're getting sleep, but actual reaching dream stage. That has to be done, as long as I'm talking about that, a minimum of 3 or 4 times per night. Doesn't matter how many hours you sleep. It matters how many times you dream, whether you remember the dreams, whether you participate in the dreams, whether they're in color, and all those other little aspects. So it's easily controlled. You put in the nutrition when you need it, and you stimulate yourself, and everything will happen. I have never run into an overtraining problem in over 30 years. Whether they're 4 years old up to 87 years old, I have never run into an overtraining problem.
Does that mean then that people should train every day, Jay, or do you break it up? How do you train your cycles? How do your days go, your weeks go?
Is this Aaron asking the question?
It is Aaron, sorry.
Aaron, that's a good question. There are no cycles. There's nothing. You train every day. We have no off-season, preseason, postseason. It's just train. In your sport, are you asked to give maximal effort every time you compete? Yes?
Yes.
Absolutely. So if you give anything less than that when you're training, how can you expect your maximal effort when you're competing? The problem is this, is that people do not train at the same emotional, intellectual level as they do when they compete. Now, no one asked this question, but I'm going to throw out the answer anyhow, and maybe you'll stimulate some other things. But if you move at less than 93% of max speed or move 93% of your max load or less, that workout is completely worthless. You must stay within 7% of max velocity, max load, and your max volume. Anything less than that does not produce results. Itself leads to overtraining. Submaximal effort causes localized inflammation. which in turn shuts down your nervous system, which in turn shuts down muscles, which in turn organs of the body recognize that, oh, these things, they don't need to be fueled. They don't need any of these things that I have, so it begins to shut down. And that's what overtraining really is. Overtraining is when your body is so inefficient at doing the basics, everything begins to break down. It isn't you're working too hard. It's that you're working inefficiently and nothing can keep up with it. That's what real overtraining is. All of my athletes overtrain a minimal of 1% to 3%, up to 10%, depending on how long I've had the athlete. Myself, personally, I'll overtrain up to 10% on a regular basis, every single day, multiple sessions, whatever it is that I do.
Jay, I remember a story that that you told me about a particular high-level athlete that you had. One workout, I don't recall exactly what the numbers were, but did something like 80 repetitions of a one rep max in a bench press.
Yeah, you got that wrong, Chris. You're a little wrong. It wasn't 80, okay? But it was 43 attempts on a max bench in 1 hour. The individual completed 37 of them correctly. So missed 6 reps. Now, correctly for me is at the right velocity, in the right position, and if it's a bench press, which it was, ending at the right position with the arms locked out evenly, yada, yada, all the basic rules of bench press. That was done 3 days in a row. The control for when the next rep was performed was heart rate return to 102. So in the beginning, needless to say, we're getting quite a few reps. Now, I don't know how many people, because I've never seen any in 30 years. If any of you guys have, let me know. But I've never seen anybody make 40 attempts in 1 hour with a max load.
Right.
And be successful. And be able to do it the next day. And the third day. And then on the fourth day, participate in their sport. Now, people will ask, well, what the heck has that got to do with anything? Well, let me just highlight what it has to do with sport. Emotionally, intellectually, psychologically, physiologically, and spiritually, this person, or whoever it is that accomplishes this, is able to peak this at any moment in time and perform at a very high level, which means when you get on the field, it doesn't matter what's happened because the opponent did something to you or the weather conditions or you had the flu or whatever it is. When a stimulus is given, there is only one result that takes place. That's what it has to do with training. I can't remember his name. He's in Las Vegas. Trains people. Something density system he has. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. But I had an open phone line, and he listened in on one of these days when we were doing this. And couldn't believe what we were doing. And in between, this individual was just visiting casually, kind of like what we are right now. When the heart rate returned to 102, it was time to go. And just kept going. And so that you know, this person was a football player. We went out and we did football drills for the second session of the day, because this was only the first session. At that time, we were training 4 or 5 times per day, depending on what his body was telling us.
Well, as far as that's concerned, how did you arrive at the number 102? Was that based on some, did you just pick that number, out of the air, or I mean, where did that number come from?
That came from my trip to Russia, Chris. Depending upon age, it's 120 or 102. And with this person's age, it was 102.
Gotcha.
So, and they were getting their heart rate up to well over 200 beats per minute. Now, at the same time he was doing it, I was doing it, as well as two other people. And we all had the same results. Within, well, to this day right now, I can go in and do a max bench press, and my heart rate will go up. I'm 52 years old. My heart rate will go up to 202, 205, and within 15 seconds, I'm 120. Now, no one will argue that if you could do that and you have skills, you have a great opportunity of being successful on an athletic field. Over and over and over again. And these injuries that people are getting today, it's because athletes do not, or so-called athletes, do not understand what maximal effort is. They've never pushed themselves, and so they experience all these bad things. But if you're prepared and you push yourself to these, well, super maximal efforts, then you're never going to experience any of the problems that these athletes have. I mean, the same injuries occur over and over and over. I mean, Dini, I'm sure you see ACL injuries on a regular basis. It's the most common thing for women athletes today. It's all because they're not prepared to do what we're asking them to do. We've taught them with skills to be very elite, but we never match their physiology to be able to support that.
Mm-hmm.
This system of training is designed to make up for that.
So, Jay, for instance, if we're doing our anaerobic training, working on speed training, I mean, one of the things that we talk to our kids about is, you know, is going hard every rep, because we're giving them a certain amount of rest, you know, and kind of what you were talking about with the bench max of you go all out on the sprint and then you get a certain amount of rest. And, I mean, we haven't put a heart rate monitor on them, but ideally,